May it please the court, Frank Patterson on behalf of the defendant in the underlying case, Patricia Cohn. And realizing that this is a companion case to the State Farm v. Clary or Clary v. State Farm case, I won't repeat a lot of the arguments, but I would like to touch right away on the issue of good cause and the waiver of privilege. Let's not forget the very first motion that was filed and asked for the protective order in this case. In that motion, plaintiff says, quote, by filing suit, plaintiff acknowledges that he impliedly waives that privilege, but only for medical records and information relating to the condition which is at issue in the case. So the plaintiff admits at the start of the case that he waives the privilege for all records related to the claims in the case. Today, for the first time, after 3, 4, 5 years of litigation, we find out that there may have been some other issue that he, other medical condition he did not want discussed. And as Ms. Foggin said in the previous argument, there is protection. There is a means of protection to avoid that disclosure, which plaintiff used in this case. During the litigation, plaintiff produced to the defendant only medical records and information relating to the condition at issue in the case. That then raises the question. I ask the question, why do you need a protective order? Why do you need additional protection for something you have never disclosed and never did disclose? That's the protective order in this case. Counsel suggests that he had this secret intention when he filed the motion way back in 2009 to prevent disclosure of a condition that was not relevant to the case, when in fact he went through the case, whether that protective order was in place or not, and did not disclose the condition. Therefore, I submit to you that there was no good cause demonstrated for the protective order in this case. The only cause suggested by Mr. Travis in the underlying case was that my client has a right to privacy. Well, we all recognize that. As Judge Hawthorne asked, well, doesn't that, aren't you trying to supplant the particularized good cause with this statute that says we all have the right to privacy? And I'm not sure we got an answer to that. But that's exactly what's happened. Instead of providing a particularized reason for additional protection beyond Alcon v. Spicer and beyond the regulatory protections, you can't just say, well, I want my privacy. You've already got privacy. You've already got the privacy protections of Alcon v. Spicer. You've already got the protections, I think it's Regulation 641. You've already got that built in. You don't need an additional good cause unless you can demonstrate to us that in this case, and particularly with something you're going to be disclosing, you need additional protections that those don't give you.
But the case has been settled.
Yes.
And how is your client harmed at this point, regardless of the outcome of this case?
I would reemphasize what Ms. Foggin said about this being a problem that will recur but evade review.
How does it evade review for your client?
Maybe not for my client.
And
my
isn't that the test?
No. If it is an important public interest issue, whether or not my individual client might be re-exposed to it is not the ultimate determiner. Because if it is an important public interest issue, my client can then stand in and have that issue taken care of for future cases. And Ms. Cohn obviously is happy to have the case over with, and she still is exposed for violations of the protective order. It still applies to her through her agents.
How does it apply to her through her agents?
That the order requires action on her part, that if she provides the materials to third parties, she's responsible for those agents' actions.
But she didn't.
Well, we did. The third party agents that we did give it to were
your
the
attorneys.
IME doctors.
Okay.
Okay. We did not give it to State Farm. And the particular public interest issue that goes beyond Ms. Cohn that we would ask the court to consider is that the defendants in these cases lose the very protection of insurance that they have purchased. We have mandatory automobile insurance in Colorado because there's a strong public policy for compensating the victims of auto accidents. An equally important public policy is for settlement of those cases.
Well, isn't it true, though, Mr. Patterson, that early on in the case you said that if you and State Farm had to comply with the protective order, it would be difficult, if not impossible, to settle the case?
And I stand by that.
But the case was settled.
It was, and perhaps not for the inherent value of the case either. I can tell you that on our side, we settled the case out of duress and stress over the inability to function in a normal fashion. Now, this isn't really the place to talk about the inherent value of the case, but I would suggest that it's our position that settlement in this case occurred not on a level playing field, but under the duress of an order that made it impossible for my client to get the assistance of the insurance that we all understand is part of the process in this case.
So I gather your position is that if plaintiff's attorneys regularly sought and obtained protective orders like the one in this case, in those circumstances, it would be difficult for defendants and insurance companies to settle the cases.
It is. In fact, I'm aware of three or four cases where the parties, one or two of them were mine, where the parties have vacated the protective order because they were unworkable. Those cases include Herrera versus State Farm, Stoddard v. Hare, Thompson versus State Farm, and Tucker v. Barnes. Tucker v. Barnes was recently in the federal court, where the parties realized that it has made it impossible for the insurance company to gather the information, evaluate the case, and approach settlement. By making it impossible to do that, not only is the defendant harmed, the plaintiff is harmed. We all know that 90 to 95% of the litigated cases settle. The system couldn't function if we didn't have that high percentage of settlements. And plaintiffs benefit from the settlements as much as defendants. So in these four cases, the attorneys representing the plaintiffs realized, I'm not doing my client a service by having a broad protective order like this. The question obviously is, what does it matter to Ms. Cohn? Well, in this case, Ms. Cohn did not get what she should have gotten in terms of a fair level playing field in the defense of the case. Now, I know the case has settled, but during the course of the litigation, it made it incredibly difficult for her attorney, as well as her insurance company, to do what is normally done routinely in thousands of cases. And we would like the court to understand that the disruption, both in my office and with the claim representatives that I work with, make it impossible for this to be done on any scale. It was able to be done through extraordinary effort in this case, but the claims people with whom I worked have thousands of cases. In my office, we have 50 or 100 cases. We cannot function in a system where the claim representative and supervisor, the people who can actually place value on the case, have to stop all of their work on everything they're doing to travel to the attorney's office, to get a conference room, and to go through a bunch of stuff all at once. It disrupts not only their functioning, but the defense, the functioning for them. In the underlying case, it's really about the defendant and the plaintiff, but we all recognize that there's a three-party relationship, the tripartite relationship. The insurance company is an essential player in the underlying case. I think Judge Lemon's modified order from January of 2011 did not recognize the important role that the insurance company plays. While they are not a party per se, the system doesn't function without them. Plaintiff doesn't benefit and the defendant doesn't benefit. So it's important that the insurance company, my client's insurance company, in order for my client to get the benefit of it, be able to function in a relatively routine manner. Now that gets us back then to the particularized good cause. Knowing that they are a third party player in the system, is there a reason for an individual plaintiff to seek a protective order? And then again, that brings me back to, we have the protections in place for the privacy of the individual, both by statute and by regulation. And then Rule 26 says that you may have that extra protection if you can demonstrate that what is in place that isn't enough. There are literally hundreds, if not thousands, of people who have developed these national standards for privacy of records. Those hundreds or thousands of people have spent tens of thousands of hours on it and millions of dollars on it. So that I think it would be inappropriate to say that a trial court can supplant the information that they've learned or change what they have done. It can supplement what they have done, again, in the particularized fashion. If there is a particular condition that may be at issue in this case that requires special attention. And I'd like to finish then with a follow-up on one question that was asked, I think, by Judge Taubman. What are the circumstances where a trial court would deny a request for a protective order if all you need to say is, I want my privacy? I can't think of any. I can't think of a situation where if that statute, as Judge Hawthorne mentioned, is the replacement for particularized good cause, then it's appropriate in every single action that the plaintiff would request, which again gets us back into the inability to function in the tort system.
So, and conversely, as if I understand your position correctly, Mr. Patterson, you're saying that only if a plaintiff can show a particularized condition that is at issue with respect to the adjustment of that insurance claim might a protective order be appropriate. Is that a fair statement?
Close. That, or in addition to that, if they can show one of these additional uses, for instance, rate making, there may be a competing statute that says you can't set rates based upon an HIV status of a person. And if that were the issue, the court might impose that single limitation as opposed to a blanket limitation. Again, it would have to be the plaintiff looking at one of those legislatively or regulatory permissible uses of the information and saying that one or those three are to be limited in this case because of a particular reason, but not as a blanket approach. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Patterson.
This is Todd Travis again for the record. One of the questions that Mr. Patterson just asked was, did Judge Lemon consider State Farm's interest? Not only did she consider State Farm's interest, but before the issue was even ripe, she turned around and allowed them to come in and have a hearing where both Mr. Seaman and Mr. Chambers, as well as the previous counsel, were there. And we have a transcript of that hearing that the court has as part of the trial or the exhibits for the Court of Appeals. The other thing is, Some of the red herrings that we have in this case is State Farm says it would impede their ability to adjust and handle this claim because we're handling it in a different fashion. Now, some of this is rather interesting because Farmers, Progressive, Allstate, all these other insurance companies seem to be able to handle these with these protective orders in almost the identical fashion when they're issued. And they don't seem to have any problems settling the cases or getting rid of them. Not only that, but as Judge Lemon said, I think it's on in an order of May 27th of 2009, it's page 1938 of the record, that State Farm's problems in this regard appear to be self-inflicted and do not appear to be insurmountable. In other words, State Farm sets up this system internally that makes it difficult for them to take the information out, do what they need to do, so that they have to do it in that manual fashion. The other carriers don't necessarily do it that way. But yet Mr. Clary is going to be penalized because he was hit by a State Farm insurer that he had no control over, who Mr. Cohen was insured with. And now, because State Farm has an internal system that is difficult or expensive to get this information back out if it's put into the internal database, that Mr. Clary, just in essence, his rights, when you weigh them, are less important than State Farm's rights to adjust the claim. And I don't believe that that's the case or that's the case law. If they're both competing interests and they're both a statute for privacy and they're both a statute for confidentiality to be able to adjust the claim and to handle Division of Insurance regulations, then both of them shouldn't be looked at equally. One shouldn't be out, one shouldn't outweigh the other. And what State Farm is having this court do is say State Farm's interest is more important than Mr. Clary's privacy rights. They're also saying, State Farm is saying, and so is the defendant, that Mr. Clary or any claimant should just trust an insurance company to do the right thing, that they will adequately protect the information. Now, I don't think there's anybody, like, if you look at the newspaper at least once a week, you will see some company somewhere that somehow disseminates some information, or it just gets out there. And that's private information. The way to handle that is the way Mr. Clary did. Do a confidentiality provision and a protective order to make sure that it's taken care of, and to make sure that if it does get disclosed, that there's some repercussions for them being, for it being disclosed. Right now, if I did not do the protective order, what would end up happening is State Farm would not have any repercussions, because they weren't even under the jurisdiction of the court. They weren't a party to the case. And that's a problem. They could say, well, you know, I'm Patricia Cohn. I'm not State we're defending Patricia Cohn, and State Farm has no obligations under the court order to do anything. And I think that's a problem, because State Farm, I mean, they can't just tiptoe in and tiptoe out on this case. And that's what they tried to do with the intervention. And yes, it's for one issue, and the court has already agreed that they could come in for the intervention, but the underlying issue still has never changed since day one. They've had, I think, 7 times to be able to argue this in front of Judge Lemon. The question comes down to, did she abuse her discretion? Did she not consider State Farm's interest? And I don't think there's anything in the record that shows that she didn't carefully consider that and balance those issues.
Mr. Travis, yes. Let me ask you a question. If State Farm had not been allowed to intervene in this case, and as you said, they would be just on the outside as the insurer and not a party to the case.
Sure.
And if they came into possession of some of Mr. Clary's medical records during the litigation, and if they later disclosed some of those medical records or revealed some of those medical records to someone, which resulted in embarrassment to Mr. Clary, would he not have recourse against State Farm even without the protective order that has been issued?
Depends how State Farm got access to those records. If we voluntarily produced those, then I think that would be problematic.
If you voluntarily produced them because you're trying to settle this case, and you gave them to Mr. or Ms. Cohn's defense counsel, and defense counsel turned it over to State Farm, and State Farm revealed those records, violated the confidentiality of those records, would there not be some recourse that Mr. Clary could take against State Farm?
When I read AT versus State Farm, that's almost analogous to what occurred. We have a doctor who turned around in that situation and had her own personal injury claim, and State Farm kept the records and then used that when she was an expert witness later on. And the court said that unless we take a plaintiff takes affirmative action, that it is deemed waived. So I believe unless I would have gotten a protective order, I don't think I have a claim, because in AT versus State Farm, the court said and held up on summary judgment, she doesn't have a claim.
So it's your position that these other legislative and regulatory protections argued by Mr. Patterson and Ms. Foggin would not give you any relief?
Well, there's so many holes and exceptions, as Judge Lemon said, that realistically, what teeth would it have? And I think that's the problem with the whole issue, is where does Mr. Clary go if he didn't do a protective order and he voluntarily provided the records and didn't ask or try to get State Farm to limit those? Then whatever provisions they have, I mean, 18 versus State Farm is still valid law. To my understanding, it wasn't superseded or abolished by the regulations. Those helped codify certain things in the regulations, but it's unclear whether even medical records are included under the Division of Insurance regulations. So, I mean, you got one affidavit from a William Kervin, and you got another affidavit from a Mike Hodges, and you know, they both have differences of opinion as to whether that includes that or whether that is even relevant. So in answer to your question, I don't necessarily know whether if Mr. Clary voluntarily produced it and State Farm did what they normally do and it went, for example, to the Medical Information Bureau, then I think he's out of luck if he did that. It's kept coming and said that we don't have a good cause requirement. The privacy requirement in of itself, under the mandates of AT versus State Farm, give us that good cause requirement. And there was a specific orders that I have attached to the briefs and to the motions from other courts that addressed that issue. And it was kind of like, I think there was a judge in Boulder, or magistrate, Hamilton Fieldman in Boulder District Court, who said it would be like the closing the gate after the barn door has closed. That's the problem. You have to affirmatively do it. Otherwise, I can't think of a single instance where I could get a protective order. It would be very, very difficult. And to imagine where State Farm could say, well, even if it's private and confidential, the information, let's assume we have the HIV or the hepatitis C situation with Mr. Clary and that. What would end up happening is, well, we have a policy and procedure in place to protect those records. Again, the problem is they can change that at any time. And that is an issue for us. We have no control over how that is set up, when it is set up, how long it's set up for, and whether that changes down the road or what systems they use. Right now, State Farm doesn't use a computerized system like Colossus or Teach2 or some of these other programs that other companies do. And those programs are designed to put in the injuries and then spit out a number as to what other people's claims for the same type of injuries are. That's what Colossus does for Allstate. And I'm not sure if the court's familiar with that, but the point is there's nothing to stop State Farm from taking Mr. Clary's records if there's no protective order in place, and then, or his medical information, and then using that when they decide 6 months from now or a year from now to do a system like that. And that's what I want to prohibit, is they don't have to convert your private medical records to any purposes that they want. And that's the issue in this case, where they want to be able to say, you made a claim, everything's waived. Everything on the table is waived. And I don't believe that the law says that, and I think we cited to that in the briefs.
Let me follow up on the question I just asked you. Mr. Patterson says that in your initial motion for protective order that Mr. Clary waived his medical privileges as to those medical records which were applicable to the injuries that were the subject matter of that particular piece of litigation. Is that correct?
That is for you waive. The case law, I think, is clear that when you make a claim and you file a lawsuit, you're waiving the confidentiality to the rights for those records. So if you have a back injury, you waive it for the back injury. Okay. You don't necessarily waive it for the cold or the flu that you had or your big toe that got hurt 5 years ago. And that's not the issue in this case. That's not the records we're trying to necessarily protect.
I understand that. But wouldn't Mr. Clary's recourse have been that to not disclose any other medical information than those records which you waived the privilege for initially?
And we did that dance. I did a protective or a privilege log, and that was objected to, and we went back and forth. And in fact, Judge Lemon, when it came to the tax returns and some of the other confidential information, which isn't before this court, the Judge Lemon did that balancing test to determine what was privileged, what wasn't privileged, what had to be disclosed, what not. So we went through the Alcon versus Weil Weil versus Dillon, I think is what it is. So we did do that. And the problem with the way it's done is typically, in a practical point of view, defense counsel is not necessarily happy or content with me saying these are medical records that are privileged and confidential and have nothing to do with the case. I'm not a medical doctor anymore, the defense counsel is. And so you get into the point where, and you do have some plaintiff's attorneys who will say, you know, I'm not going to give pain for the left side of neck pain because that's not an issue. We're only talking right side of neck pain. I don't think that's the proper application of Alcon. I think it's if you got neck pain, you give them the neck pain. But, and that's what we did in this case. So there's no real information that I think, as far as the value, that we can argue about it. You know, there was an, Mr. Patterson said something about, well, we may have overpaid the claim or we were under duress for that. No, they, looks like they evaluated the claim with some very serious injuries based upon a moped versus an automobile collision.
Mr. Travis, let me ask you a question, and Mr. Patterson, I may ask you the same question. So it seems to me in this full case that there's very little of a middle ground, that with respect to your position, State Farm says, Mr. Travis, that every plaintiff is going to ask for a protective order, and just by invoking the right to privacy, will be able to obtain one. And conversely, State Farm is saying that the regulations are enough and that State Farm will always make sure that no improper information is disclosed. So this seems to me different from the, in other contexts where people talk about obtaining protective orders that are specific to the needs of a particular case. Could you address that, please?
Yes. The middle ground in this is to address the fear that State Farm has. I mean, this case is over. So in some respects, some of it is moot. I mean, there's no, how can I say, State Farm, it's a State Farm issue more so than it is a Mr. Clary issue. And what ends up happening is the best way to handle it with Mr. Patterson has the requirement under, for malpractice purposes, to keep those records for 10 years. If, in fact, one of the fears is that the Division of Insurance is going to come and audit and they're going to address some of the things and say, I want to see those records, then, they, I mean, there's a valid, there'll be a valid protective order in the file. And if that's not still good enough for the Division of Insurance, then State Farm can contact me or Mr. Clary through the council, and they have the records. And in other words, we can argue with that with the Division of Insurance. There is no real harm. I don't think there's a single instance that State Farm has been able to point out in the entire country where that has become an issue. In this, where if there's a valid protective order that somehow they're supposed to, if they violate the protective order, or if they don't violate the protective order, they're in violation of the Division of Insurance. The catch-22 that they're claiming really doesn't exist. And I have 25 seconds, so unless somebody else has anything else, I think I'm going to be done. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Travis. Mr. Patterson, you have 2 minutes and 43 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. And I'll answer the middle ground question first. If you look back through the record, in September 17, 2009, there was an offer of an alternative protective order. And in the related cases in the Court of Appeals from the Pueblo District Court, there were offers of alternative protective orders that allow State Farm to perform its normal functions, insurance functions, subject to regulations and statute, so that there is an alternative proposed by us or by State Farm through its defense lawyers. We have yet to be shown in any of these cases, not just this one, but in the other cases on which I'm working, both for State Farm Insureds and for State Farm, we have yet to be shown a single particularized fact in any of the cases as to why they need a protective order, good cause beyond what exists in the statute. In those cases where there, the four that I mentioned, where they vacated the protective order because it made settlement impossible, there were modified orders. There is a middle ground available through the orders that we've suggested. In my experience, both in this case and other cases, on behalf of insurers like Ms. Cohn and the company, no plaintiff has ever shown that State Farm has once in 10,000 or 100,000 or a million claims over the past decade breached anybody's privacy rights. Not once. Hundreds of thousands of claims. There's never been evidence to show that there was a need for a protective order because of some prior breach. Counsel suggested that the defense lawyer, myself in this case, or the defense lawyer in other cases where a protective order is requested, and if State Farm can't maintain the records, that the defense lawyer can become the repository for the insurance company's records. I don't think that's what the Division of Insurance plans, and I certainly don't think most lawyers would volunteer to be the repository of records for insurance companies. The question was asked by Judge Hawthorne, if State Farm somehow got the records and improperly used them, does plaintiff have relief? Most certainly the plaintiff would. It would be a violation both of the regulations and the statutes. They provide independent causes of action, whether there was a underlying piece of litigation or not. Both the statute and then the regulations would be the basis for the plaintiff to pursue State Farm or any insurance company directly for violating and misusing private personal health information. And absent any questions?
I don't think so. Thank you very much, Mr. Patterson. Thank you again, Mr. Travis. We thank you both for your fine arguments this afternoon on this case. This case also will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course. This can